spirit of reconciliation, Mylomo Australia acknowledges the traditional custodians of country throughout Australia and their connections to land, sea and community. We pay our respects to the elders past and present and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people today. Welcome to My Conversations, Mylomo Australia's podcast series. These podcasts are written and produced by our myeloma support nurses for people living with myeloma, their family and friends. We aim to deliver interesting and up-to-date information on myeloma in a portable and convenient way through our podcast shows.
Welcome everyone to this episode of My Conversations, a Myeloma Australia podcast. My name is Hayley Beer and I'm Head of Stakeholder Engagement at Myeloma Australia. I'm delighted to be your host today and to introduce you to a very good friend of Myeloma Australia, all the way from New York City, Donna Catamaro. Donna is the Associate Director of Myeloma Research at the Icahn School of Medicine, the Mount Sinai Hospital in New York. And for 20 years, Donna has been involved in clinical research. She worked as a nurse practitioner in the Multiple Myeloma Program at New York University Langone Medical Center in New York City and later at Mount Sinai, also in New York, until 2018. Then she spent 2 years in industry working in the Celgene Corporation as Scientific Director of Medical Affairs in Multiple Myeloma, where she supported the launch of CAR-T cell product IdaCell and developed a CAR-T educational program for healthcare providers. She's now back at Mount Sinai, where she serves as Director of Myeloma Research. In this position, she oversees clinical research projects and develops standards of care for professional practice. She's also an active author, presenter, and educator, including co-authoring On the Horizon, the concluding chapter in Multiple Myeloma, a textbook for nurses. She also sits on the International Myeloma Foundation Nurse Leadership Board, where she's been a member since 2014. Additionally, having worked in the front lines during the initial COVID surge in New York City, she authored an article on considerations of COVID-19 specific myeloma guidelines in New York City. We're really lucky to have Donna with us today, and she'll take us through how myeloma impacts different body systems and the supportive care strategies that are used to keep people living as well as possible while on and off treatment. Welcome, Donna.
Thank you for having me.
It's great to have you with us. So Donna, supportive care is a topic that gets thrown around quite commonly with health professionals, but it sometimes doesn't always make sense to people living with myeloma. So maybe we start by giving a brief explanation of what is supportive care.
So supportive care, to me, it's managing symptoms, whether it be from your myeloma or from the treatments we give to treat your myeloma.
Yeah, perfect. So I know you probably agree when you're treating your patients in New York that when they're newly diagnosed and it's all very new and a brand new world they're being thrust into, there's the treatment that people expect to be given for myeloma, but often all the accessory medications can add up and seem really overwhelming in the beginning. So today it'd be great to go through some of the measures that we take to help people stay well while they're having treatment, and how the different body systems that myeloma treatments can impact and how we manage these. So one of the most common body systems or parts of the body that myeloma can affect is the bones. So can you talk a little bit about how myeloma impacts the bones?
Right. So about 85% of patients will at some point in their disease process have bone destruction, whether that be in the form of a lytic lesion or osteoporosis, osteopenia, which is thinning of the bone. Oftentimes this causes significant pain. So what we like to do is start off patients once they're diagnosed on bone strengthening agents, so bisphosphonates. And so what this does, it doesn't actually grow new bone to replace the damage that's done, but it fortifies the bone that's there, the healthy bone. So it makes it less likely for a patient to have a fracture. We see that with these types of drugs that it actually improves a patient's outcome. So these are really important supportive care medications. Again, we are going to decrease the incidence of patients having fractures, because that can be, you know, patients can fall and break a bone and that has its own other implications. But even though these drugs are supportive, there can be some side effects to these drugs. So before we start any bisphosphonate, we make sure that our patients have a dental clearance so that they don't need any dental extractions. Because what we see with these drugs is that even though this drug is supposed to fortify bones, make them stronger, we do see that it can cause some deterioration in the jawbone. So we don't want that to happen for patients. So we need to make sure that if they need any dental extractions, to get that done before we start initiating with this therapy. That's not to say like they can't go for cleanings or even filling cavities. It's when we actually remove or extract the tooth that puts a patient at higher risk for this complication.
Mm. Yeah, and so those bisphosphonate medications, are they a tablet or an infusion? What we typically use an IV, so I'm thinking people identify with an additional intravenous infusion as their bisphosphonate medication.
Right. So they're typically given as an IV. So Zometa is the most common one that we use in the States. And we actually tie it in with their treatment. So if a patient's coming in for a Velcade or a daratumumab infusion or injection, we tie it in so that they're getting it. We give it once a month. I know you can give it every 3 to 4 weeks. We like to do that at least for the first 2 years to, again, provide that protection for bone health.
Yeah, perfect. I think we're very similar here in that respect. And bone, the impacts of myeloma on the bones can often bring with it some pain.
Right.
What's your experience of managing pain or how do you see that manifest in patients?
Yeah, so that's one of the more common side effects is pain. There are several ways we can manage it. If it's located to one area, radiation might be a good option for patients. They can get either one dose or several doses of radiation. And what it's doing is it's killing the myeloma cells in that area and then thus providing pain relief. If the pain is more widespread, there are certainly medications we can give. We want to avoid any non-steroidal drugs. But you know, if patients, I tell them not to be martyrs. No one should ever be suffering from pain. So we can provide that supportive care, whether it be through opioids and well managed so that we want to limit any chance of dependency.
Mm. And from your experience, I know there is, I've seen myself some reluctance sometimes in the beginning. How do you describe the initial pain experience with the diagnosis of myeloma compared to, say, 6 months down the track? Do you see an improvement or?
As we're treating the disease, in theory, the pain should get better. So we're killing off all, the bad myeloma cells, and patients' pain will improve over time. But during that period, we need to support the patient through their treatment. So we often will prescribe a pain regimen for patients. And then we can titrate off of that as their disease improves and therefore their pain should improve.
Yeah, fabulous. And then leading on to the next body system being the kidneys, how would you say myeloma affects the kidneys and what kinds of things can we do to help keep the kidneys safe?
Yeah, so about 18% of patients at diagnosis will have some degree of renal insufficiency. And we know that our kidneys are an essential organ. They filtrate through the kidneys. So we have to keep those kidneys healthy. We really need to avoid any type of medications that are what we call toxic to the kidneys. So I tell my patients, anything new prescribed to you, just run it by me so I can make sure that there's no ill effect on the kidneys. We also might have to dose adjust certain medications, avoid medications altogether, and then we encourage patients to maintain adequate hydration. And I know that can be challenging, but really patients should be at least having 2 liters of water a day, which I know it's difficult for me, so I can imagine for patients, but it really provides, the kidneys that needs that healthy lifestyle.
Mm, yeah, absolutely. I also find it's very common for it to be difficult to get in that 2 liters of water a day. It can be quite challenging. But do you have any tips on how to make water easier to palate? Do you have any fancy things? Some people say squeezing lemon juice. So I don't know if you have any top tips for your patients.
So things like tea, you know, it doesn't have to necessarily be water, but I would say uncaffeinated, no sugar beverages. So seltz or sometimes patients rather anything with bubbles in can help patients maybe get to that 2 liter mark a day, but or some unsweetened flavors, fruit, cut up fruit or even cucumbers can help make it more palatable for patients. But yeah, it is a challenge, but for myeloma patients, it's really important to maintain the 2 liters.
Yeah, absolutely. So moving on from the kidneys, there is an increased risk for people with myeloma to get blood clots. So is there anything that increases that risk even further, or what's your management strategy for preventing blood clots in patients?
Right. So patients just with the diagnosis of myeloma puts them at elevated risk. And then we give immunomodulatory agents, so Revlimid, Pomalyst, that puts them at even higher risk. So when a patient is starting those types of treatment, we make sure that patients are at least on a low dose aspirin. If they're at higher risk, maybe they're not as mobile, more of a sedentary lifestyle, then we might think of adding something in a little bit stronger. Patients who are traveling, and I say anywhere 3 hours or longer on a plane or in a car ride, that puts them at higher risk. So again, I can temporarily increase, give them a medication that will provide them protection while they're traveling. We also like advising patients about compression socks when traveling as well, because they are at higher risk, and especially the medications we give to treat their myeloma puts them at even higher risk.
Yeah, that's right. And you've just experienced a very long haul flight, which is what Australians have to, if we want to go anywhere overseas, it's a huge flight. And yeah, really, really important that people feel that they can still travel, but there just are some extra, considerations.
Right.
For, yeah.
And get up, like if it's a long flight, get up and walk a few times. And even I wear my compression socks when traveling. It's just, you know, being mobile and let us provide you a little extra protection while you're traveling.
Yeah, perfect. So then moving on from blood clots and maybe some more side effects of treatment as well as myeloma. Even though this is less of a problem than maybe it was 15 years ago, but peripheral neuropathy is still something that people encounter living with myeloma. Can you explain a little bit what that is and why it happens?
So peripheral neuropathy, to me, I find so challenging to manage. And there are several... So peripheral neuropathy can present as either like a pins and needles sensation or just cold sensation, and it can really affect someone's mobility and quality of life. There are a small percentage of patients that actually present with peripheral neuropathy before we even start treatment, and that's the myeloma cells are attacking their nerves, and the way to manage that is to start treatment right away. There are other drugs that we give that cause neuropathy, and I advise patients to tell me as soon as they start having these symptoms, because, you know, I don't want it to get to the point where a patient is struggling to walk down the hall, and I don't want it to get permanent. So I think the key is to mitigate things early. So tell me your symptoms. Do you need a dose reduction? I think that's the best way to manage it. There are other medications that we can give that may provide some support or relief, but it doesn't work for everyone. So let us know, let us try different interventions, but it can be difficult to manage, and you want to let us know sooner rather than later, because I want to jump in and try to help.
Absolutely. We're going to take a short break now. We'll be back shortly.
Myeloma Australia advocates for people living with myeloma. This can involve engaging with government bodies, healthcare institutions, and pharmaceutical companies to ensure that patients have access to the best possible care, treatment options, and support services. To learn more about Myeloma Australia's advocacy programs, please check out our website on www.myeloma.org.au.
Welcome back to My Conversations. I'm Hayley Beer and I'm here with Donna Catamaro from New York discussing the importance of supportive care therapies. And aside from the effects of the in the peripheries, in the hands and feet, is there other ways that neuropathy can affect the body, in constipation or dizziness?
Yeah, so patients can get that when they're sitting and then standing up quickly. They can get a little dizziness. They can feel some muscle weakness too from neuropathy. Patients also will complain of cramping as well. So again, we try certain interventions, but unfortunately, not one intervention is going to work for everyone. So we need to keep trying.
Yeah, I had somebody tell me they found doing some light exercise just before jumping into bed to increase the blood flow helped them prevent getting cramps overnight. Mm-hmm. I thought, oh, that was a great, not too hard to do strategy. Because right. Cramps can be quite debilitating.
And then a lot of patients say that tonic soda helps as well, because tonic has quinine in it that can be helpful. But again, things can be helpful and I share them, but it might not work for everyone.
Yeah, that's right. It makes it tricky. And are there any creams that you have found have been anecdotal beneficial help for patients? Again, knowing that it doesn't always help everybody.
It can help, and I've had patients tell me that a bar of soap, between their sheets would help them, but, pickle juice can help. But, these are all anecdotal. Yeah. I can't find that silver bullet if it helps for you, then do it. That's what I advise patients.
Yeah, fabulous. And just, I guess, at this point, I'll mention we have a book on peripheral neuropathy that has a lot of these tips and strategies in it that you can find on the Myeloma Australia website.
I also want to add about neuropathy too is, rule out other causes. Many patients have diabetes, and if that's not well controlled, that can cause the neuropathy, and managing a patient's blood sugar can actually help. Ruling out any vitamin deficiencies as well, that's something we can easily provide supplementation, and patients can actually, the neuropathy will resolve.
Yeah, fabulous. And moving on from neuropathy, there treatments can also often affect bowel function. So I guess we've touched on this a little bit, but are you seeing patients that need help managing constipation or diarrhea?
Yeah. So, with constipation, pain medications, even anti-nausea medications can cause constipation. And so I will, especially if patients are on pain medication, I will put them on a bowel regimen, usually with a laxative and a stool softener, and just something to keep a patient regular. So that's important to let us know, because that's something we can easily get under control. With diarrhea, some of the treatments we give can cause diarrhea. I know Revlimid maintenance can be problematic for patients. We have a lot of useful agents that we can give patients to support them through the maintenance period. Also, it's important to know whether or not a patient is lactose intolerant, because those capsules do have lactose in them. So, let us know, because, certain drugs can cause diarrhea. Always report that. We have medications. We have antidiarrheal medications that we can provide patients and get them through that so that they can stay on treatment.
Yeah, definitely. And then nausea is something that hasn't been such of an issue with recent newer developed therapies, but we do have a new treatment that's recently been approved in Australia called Selinexor.
Right.
And while that's a very effective treatment, it can give a lot of nausea if not managed well. So do you have you've had a lot more experience with that drug in America. How do you start and manage your patients so that nausea is not so bad?
So patients will need to be on more than one anti-nausea medication. And nausea is really dose dependent with Selinexor. So I have a very, very low threshold if a patient is having nausea that's affecting their intake of food. I will hold and dose reduce. And I find that patients tolerate a dose reduction much better than me throwing more antiemetics at them. So I have patients that are on selinexor that are doing very well on an intermediate dose without compromising the efficacy of the drug. So I think we have to take in consideration that we can start patients maybe at a lower level and provide a multi-drug antiemetic regimen for patients.
Would you say that theory could be applied to most treatments for myeloma?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so it's always important to tell your doctor what's happening with you. There's always something we can do to change.
Right. Yeah. So, you have to advocate for yourself. You're part of the healthcare team. Let us know. We can't help you if we don't know.
Yep, definitely. And so the next topic is nutritional or food intake. And we know that the appetite or taste can be affected by treatments. Do you have any, thoughts on how to help people through those periods?
Right. And so one thing I will say about nutrition, and we talked about diarrhea, especially with patients on Revlimid maintenance, we see that when patients eat high fat, greasy foods, that actually will be a trigger for diarrhea. So, I say everything in moderation. Having a healthy nutritional, diet will go a long way. I'm not saying to avoid sugars or anything like that, but everything in moderation. The healthier you go in, the better, that patients tolerate treatment. And I think a good healthy diet for patients, and we work a lot with nutritionists. So if I see that patients are losing weight on treatment, I work with them to see what, can we get a higher protein diet for these patients?
Yeah. And would you, going along, I guess, nutrition, to me, exercise kind of goes hand in hand with under the umbrella of things that you can do to help yourself. What's your thoughts on safe exercise or the importance of exercise?
So fatigue is the most common side effect from the disease, from treatment. And I feel like it actually helps fatigue. So I know all you want to do is just sit and take a nap. But actually, if you get up and walk, it can help fatigue. And just, non-weight bearing exercise can be very helpful for patients. I will advise, if patients want to do more, to speak with their healthcare team. Patients having lytic lesions and bone lesions, I want to make sure that they're not lifting heavy weights, and just run it by your team.
Yeah. Excellent. Great advice. So the next topic to talk about is something that our friend in Sydney, Tracy King, calls the devil's tic-tacs, the steroids, the underdog of the myeloma treatment regime. They have sometimes difficult to manage side effects. They're a very important part, but they can sometimes cause some trouble or havoc with the patient's body. What are your how would you explain the side effects of steroids and how to maybe manage them?
Yeah, I think steroids are the worst with side effects. It literally affects every body system. Patients, difficulty sleeping. Again, we might have to look and see a patient's sleep hygiene. Don't go to bed with your phone, your tablet, put that aside. Sometimes patients do need some sleep aids to help them through, especially the days that they're dosing with their dexamethasone. It can weight gain. There can be body images with that, gastric reflux. So patients might need medication for acid buildup. It's just steroids are very difficult to manage. And for some patients, I do need to go down on the dose for the steroids. Or sometimes we switch out the dex for a different type of steroid, which might be better tolerated. So again, it's a matter of working with your team and finding a regimen that works with you.
Yeah, absolutely. And do you see many mood changes or impacts on mental health even?
Yeah, it's usually the spouse that comes in and complains. And again, that's why healthcare or care partners are very important. They're the ones who often report the mood changes. dexamethasone can be really difficult. And again, if that is not a good partner for you, I can maybe, you know, find another steroid that's better tolerated. But yes, patients do have these mood swings and these energy swings that are associated with the dexamethasone.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think that can be really challenging. But once again, things we can do to help to get through. One of the last points of conversation for today, and one of the most important, is infection risk. So the way that myeloma can affect the immune system and treatments also. How would you explain the impact on the immune system from myeloma and treatments?
Yeah, so having the diagnosis of myeloma puts a patient at 7 to 9 increased fold of having an infection. So just having the disease puts you at high risk. Now the treatments I'm giving you to treat your myeloma puts you at even higher risk. So infections, I think, are one of the more problematic complications of myeloma. So, you know, off the bat, I implore my patients to be fully vaccinated, whether it's seasonal flu, pneumonia, and even COVID boosters. We need that protection. I monitor a patient's healthy IgG levels. If I see that they're significantly low or if they've had a recurrent infection, I'm going to supplement that with IVIG. So we'll do that for patients. I don't normally prophylax patients with antibiotics, but if they are at higher risk because of certain treatments we're giving them, then I will add that in. And then that education, when to report to me that you're not feeling well. If you have a temperature over 38, you know, you're going to give me a call and we're going to work you up.
Absolutely. And so that was excellent. You've obviously adopted the Celsius degree.
It's the only thing I know.
Really good. We always you know, explain to our patients fever straight to hospital. And in anything that they need to think about when they're traveling and infection risk.
So COVID is not going away. You know, anything that puts you at higher risk, if you're in an airplane or in a crowded area, mask up, especially, you know, during the fall and winter months, you're at higher risk for COVID, but other respiratory illnesses we see, or we're seeing in New York RSV, in addition with COVID and flu, to, you know, send patients to the hospital. And, you know, fortunately, a new RSV vaccine will be available, hopefully in the next few weeks, that I'm going to implore our patients to get. It's just another extra layer of infection. And, you know who you'll be around. Are you going to have any sick contacts? You know, avoid, you really need to avoid infection. Know your risks.
Yeah, very, very good advice. And you, as per usual, the states have usually get approvals for new drugs coming through before we get them in Australia. So you've got some experience in delivering CAR T-cell therapy, bispecific antibodies with your patients. And we're hearing that these new immunotherapies are maybe perhaps causing a more infection risk in patients. Would you say that's the case?
Yeah, so any therapy that's going to target BCMA, which is a receptor on the myeloma cell, places patients at very high risk. And we're seeing high grades of infection. So infection that is requiring IV antibiotic use, hospital admission. So patients on these therapies are getting into a lot of trouble with infection. So that's when I might add in prophylaxis for patients, because they are at extreme risk for infection. These drugs work very well on myeloma. We're getting patients into deep, durable remissions. But with that comes unique side effects, infection being one of them. And I don't want to cure your cancer and, you know, have you go into the hospital with a severe infection. So we're providing patients an extra layer of protection when they're on these types of therapies.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, it is really exciting for us to know that these wonderful therapies are coming through, but that's just part of, I guess, evolving how we care for people with myeloma,
right?
By adding in these extra layers. But and also, I guess, to make sure we don't get complacent and still keep vigilant with the infection risk. Yeah. Well, that's all the topics that we were planning to cover today. Is there anything that you want to leave the Australian myeloma community with? Any pieces of wisdom that you wanted to share?
I just want to empower everyone to, you know, advocate for yourself, for patients. I can't help you if you don't tell me what's going on. You know, be part of your decision making. You know, let us know your goals so that we can work with you to give you the best care.
Yeah, fantastic. And thank you so much for being here. I know you've done a lot of presentations already, and it's really hard with jet lag. So thank you so much for doing that, doing this for us today. And thank you also to Darren and CVP for, as always, producing My Conversations. And we've covered a lot of ground today, and there might be some things that you've heard that maybe haven't quite made sense, or you're not quite sure how they apply to you. You can always contact the nurses at Myeloma Australia for some more information, or to talk through how these things relate to you specifically. You can get in touch with the nurses by emailing nurses@myeloma.org.au or calling the telephone support line on 1800 693 566 during business hours Monday to Friday. Thank you very much, and we'll see you next time on My Conversations.
Thanks for listening to this episode of My Conversations. We'd love to hear from you, so send us your questions or topic ideas to our email address, nurses@myeloma.org.au. Whilst the advice and opinions of our guests is welcomed, this podcast provides general information and is not intended to replace medical care or the advice of your treating team. Please talk to your doctor if you have any questions about your diagnosis or treatment. Your doctor can answer your questions, talk with you about your treatment goals, and provide you with extra support.